Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, live from the Penguin booth. This is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Gwen Berry. And today we also have Wayne Johnson with us. And we're going to open it up with a little bit of nostalgia here.
Making our game.
True gem from the summer of love, 1967. How precious.
Loved it. Loved it.
Yep.
I saw that sitting there on my YouTube page. And oh, man, okay, that's just freaking gizmo. I have to go with that. This is the Sunday Show, and I want to welcome, hey, Jack, I'm saying hello to Jack and Wayne.
Yeah, hi, Gwen. Good to see you. Good to hear everybody again, and pleasure to be with you today.
Yes, and same here, Gwen. Same here. Me too, Jack. Greetings all.
Yeah, Wayne.
Happy New Year to us all, and I'm very hopeful to a more progressive 2014.
I'm with you 100% on that one.
The year that we could. We'll call it
there
that.
We go. The year that we will.
The year that we will, but nobody put a can in there. It's like kicking one. and Happy New Year and hello to John O'Brien. He joins us a lot of Sundays, and he's in the chat room wishing us a happy holiday season.
Yeah, and, same to you, John.
Shouting out
Thank
to
you.
His buddy Wayne. And,
okay.
And so, listen, guys, I got a couple of pieces up for the show today to discuss and first listening in. And, you know, I really like Dennis Traynor Jr. at Acronym Television any kind of exposure that we can. He does such a wonderful job. He does the he does the resistance report for the Global Resistance page, and this week he's got a little. This is about a 4.5 minute wrap up of what we talked about, Jack, last week, the chemical spill.
Oh, so, yeah, good.
They're in California, absolutely. I mean, I'm sorry, they're in West Virginia, absolutely.
Yes,
Charleston.
Oh, my. Yep.
Yeah, the toxic chemical spill crisis in West Virginia will happen again, and here's why, with Dennis Traynor and his acronym Television Resistance Report.
When a massive chemical spill happens that contaminates the water supply and leaves over 300,000 people in West Virginia without water to drink, bathe, or even brush their teeth, when a dangerous event that throws a whole area of the country into an existential crisis happens, one wants to believe that state and local officials in every part of the country are paying close attention to learn from this crisis to see to it that it's averted in their communities. I mean, there's no way that a corporation, Freedom Industries in this case, would be allowed to handle a toxic foaming agent used as part of the coal preparation processing unless the facility that they were using was in tip-top shape, unless this facility, the plant processing these toxic chemicals, was in good condition.
The condition of the plant was not good. The danger was known to the previous owner, and the danger was known to the current owner.
Sorry, silly me. I forgot where I live for a moment. This is America, where choosing between corporate profits or the needs of the people is a simple choice, one that gets made over and over again. Profits trump people. It's not the kind of Trump I was talking about. But anyway, in an area also known as Chemical Valley, this is the third major chemical accident in the region in the last 5 years. And as the toxic chemicals dilute themselves in the river, and as more and more voices of authority tell people that their water is safe, those safety assessments are going to be made, according to Robert Wright's recent article quoted entitled "Fear is Why Workers in Red States Vote Against Their Economic Self-Interest," quote, partly because the government's calculation for safe levels is based on a single study by the manufacturer of the toxic chemical, which was never published, and partly because the West Virginia American Water Company, which supplies the drinking water, is a for-profit corporation that may not want to highlight any lingering danger. Now, the title and the content of the Reich article implies that the political will of the people may actually align with the will of the toxic spewing corporations in this case because, well, it all boils down to jobs. And I boil it extra long in this case. In support of this idea, Reich quotes Maya Nye, the president of the People Concerned About Chemical Safety, a citizens group that was formed after a 2008 explosion and fire killed workers at West Virginia's Bayer Crop Science plant in the state. As she explained to the New York Times, quote, "We're so desperate for jobs in West Virginia, we don't want to do anything that pushes industry out," a familiar refrain all throughout the country. Reich goes on to say, quote, "People are so desperate for jobs, they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want rules and regulations enforced that might cost them their livelihoods. For them, a job is precious, sometimes even more precious than a safe workplace or safe drinking water." Now, while it's true that the wealth divide, growing as it has in the past several decades, has made more and more people here in the richest country in the world feel like paupers in a Dickensian pageant, the idea that the solution is people in red states voting for Democrats, as Reich implies when he writes this, quote, "This is going to explain why Republican officials who have been casting their votes against unions, against expanding Medicaid, against raising the minimum wage, against extended unemployment insurance, against jobs bills that would put people to work, continue to be elected and reelected. Now, they obviously have the support of corporate patrons who want to keep unemployment high and because a pliant working class helps their bottom line, but they also, paradoxically, get the votes of many workers who are clinging so desperately to their jobs that they're afraid to change and too cowed to make a ruckus. If rocking the boat and causing a ruckus can be defined, as Reich implies, by voting for Democrats instead of Republicans, let's use Mr. Hope and Change as an example. He openly pursues an all-of-the-above energy policy that is expediting the process of climate change that will make human life on Earth uninhabitable, who is also seeking fast-track authority to ram the Trojan horse of a trade deal that is so much more than a trade deal, known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership through Congress, without public debate that would gut jobs, make our nation's laws subservient to the terms and conditions of an agreement hammered out by the global elite and advisors to multinational corporations. Now, if getting on that train is Robert Reich's idea of making a ruckus, then I fear that we're going to require a whole new thesaurus to come up with a language that will get the human species in general and occupants of the United States specifically safely off the runaway roller coaster that is propelling us towards greater inequity, propelling us toward increased environmental destruction and increased corporate profit at the expense of people. The Democrats and the Republicans both have their hands on the same wheel, their feet on the same pedal. A ruckus just isn't going to cut it.
And that's Dennis's take on it. And I think
he's right on the money, I'd say.
Yeah, I think he did a really good job critiquing Mr. Reich.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Reich's too anxious to see change come from within instead of battering down that within and bringing it back on top, you know?
Yeah, these global elite capitalists they're destroying the whole world, and it's just – and they blackmail people into thinking that if they vote against them or oppose them that it's going to cost them a job, and in some cases it does. And that's the real tragedy, that they've got the power – to do this and to you know, violate people's economic freedoms that way.
Yeah.
Hey, Gwen, if you're gonna,
yeah.
I was going to say, Gwen, just allow me a little bit here. It was the beginning of last century, in other words, the early 1900s, the chemical industry Union Carbide, which was there in the southern part of West Virginia, wanted to cut through a mountain of granite. They hired people, again, you know, the local poor people, to start, you know, blasting through and shoveling out and bringing this tunnel through the granite for their pipelines. Of course, none of the workers had any breathing mask and their self-contained breathing oxygen apparatus. And the silica, the little shards of stone dust, really, as you inhaled it, just end up slicing up your lungs. And then after a week, you know, you can't even get out of bed. Of course, the company's attitude was, well, these people are lazy. They just don't want to come to work. You know, typical thing, you give them a job. They don't want to work. You know, they just rather lay in bed. They fire them, bring in another, you know, naive group and keep on blasting through that mountain the whole time, knowing that they knew that every person they sent to do work into that tunnel was going to be dead within 2 weeks.
Jeez.
It's economic genocide.
That's Union Carbide, which is a major player right along with the coal industry in West Virginia. As I said before, my father is from West Virginia, the northern part. So I know I took it upon myself to do a lot of reading and studying of West Virginia and why to be such a beautiful, beautiful state with really good people have been so downtrodden and economically, you know, burden
exploited
through company coal mine towns, you know, that whole mentality that they have just been a huge for the last couple hundred years plus.
Well, it's genocide, pure and simple, and it ought to be punished. And unfortunately, it goes by generation after generation without question because they hold that fear of eradicating all the jobs in front of the people, and the people always vote down what's really good for them in the long run.
Absolutely. You hit that. That is well established, absolutely.
Yeah, it's utterly pitiful. I am so disgusted by that mindset and that type of behavior. But unfortunately, it's a reality, and it's been going on since before we were born, and it'll probably go on for a long, long time after we're gone. I hope I'm wrong, but you never know.
Well, how do you know, for all of the active actions that we take, whether it's with blogging or getting out during the Occupy movements or any kind of other actions that are going on, and for all of the alternative information that we're trying to put into the greater conversation of people through the social networks here. With all of these things, there's still, from my point of view, is not the vision that we really need yet. The vision just hasn't been visualized yet, because just as you say, Jack, we can't see how we're going to break through that, this hold that capitalism has on really the whole planet. It's a fear of not having what you need to survive at the very base level. Those people got up and they went to work day after day, even after the first day when they knew something was wrong, because they wanted to put food on the table. They wanted their children to grow and be healthy and safe. And the only way that society on a general basis across the planet has for people to be safe is to buy it. And, you know, my friends who are socialists, really lefty lefts, like Pinka, and others I know, I mean, even Dennis Traynor will argue the same things. You know, just capitalism just doesn't get it done. And perhaps socialism, a form of community, you know, minded vehicles driving in concurrent with each other, is the way to go. But, you know, I'm thinking that it hasn't worked. Historically, it has not worked. It's always been the greedy who climbed to the top. And I just got to say, and I'll shut up and let you guys go to it, but I think that we really need is a shift of human consciousness right now. It's a brand new vision is called for, something beyond everything that's come before.
Well, Glenn, when you really think of the long history of mankind, you know, you'll find more hideous crimes have been committed in the name of obedience than has ever been committed in the name of rebellion.
That's good point.
Far more. Keep it in line. Keep the downtrodden down. A friend of mine, a blogger called Microdot, he's a Detroit boy, but he's living in the Bordeaux region of France. He did a piece on the German peasant rebellion around 1525, where, you know, those that were in charge, those that had all the land and all the ownership and everything, basically with organized armies, went out when the people were complaining, we're starving, we're not being fed, you know, we need a better life for ourselves. They just sent the troops out, went out and slaughtered them, and then when it was all done, they erected monuments to themselves congratulating their victory over the peasants. That's the kind of mindset that is still, in essence, here today.
Very good point, Wayne. Very good point and very relevant, because I'll tell you what, the powers that be are just screwing everybody below them at a record pace nowadays, and that we need a major mind shift, not only in this country but globally. This global capitalist elite is completely decimating everybody. It's keeping people down. It's not providing for opportunity. It's limiting opportunity. It's trying to control markets. Rather than it says it's for free enterprise, it is not for free enterprise. It's for oligarchy. It's for power all to one group of people, and that is not good.
How do we accomplish this shift in thought, this paradigm shift? And the only way it's going to happen, as far as I can see, is for people. I keep wondering, guys. I got to ask you. I keep wondering, we have so many people on this planet now, and we also have, I mean, you know, more than ever thought of before in any known history of the planet, it's going close to, what, 7 billion people, or is it more than that?
I think it's more than that now, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, you know, I'm pedaling backwards sometimes on the Schwinn. But here's the thing. We also have a more able to inform society through this social networking that we're using right now. And I can't
right.
help but think that there's hope in that, because there's more masses than ever before. There's more opportunity for people
right.
to...
Well, you know, the sad thing is, Gwen, this net neutrality, the Supreme Court weakened that just recently. It didn't kill it, but it weakened it by granting rights that we don't want granted to the corporate powers. And, you know, it depends on how far they're going to go with this, what the end result will be. But, you know, they're trying to co-opt it right now. You know, they're trying to get their control over that as well. And this is the only alternative that we have right now, is a free, unadulterated Internet, and to be able to freely speak ideas across many different avenues, you know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or whatever the case may be, or just the common Internet. You know, that's the only alternative we have right now to this corporate profiteering that's rampant all over the entire world.
Well, so much of our commerce has been shifted over to Internet. For them to
mm-hmm.
fully lock down the Internet is impossible. If they did
oh, right.
that,
exactly.
so
yeah.
much commerce would halt that it would be cutting their noses to spite their faces.
But they can limit the amount of access that opponents of them have, and they're trying to do that in various ways. And they're going to find a way to pull it off eventually. But we've got to resist that. We've got to fight that tooth and nail every step of the way. And, you know, a little while ago, we had that great movement called Occupy, which isn't dead yet. It's just a little more dormant than it was. It's not as visible. But we thought that was the be-all and end-all. But you know what? That was just one of many evolutionary moves that are going to have to occur in the economic sector for true justice and true real economic freedom to occur. And these guys at Trump are all this Freedom Industries. What a joke of a name. The people that work for them aren't freedom at all. They have no freedom at all.
Well, and the other thing about them is that they declared bankruptcy this week, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Typical.
Yeah.
Well, that's just to avoid the lawsuit payment on lawsuits that may arise. Very shrewd move, but very disgusting and cynical move, too. And you know what? That they... Those guys, they're despicable, those people.
Well, despicable doesn't even cover it. But, you know, I mean, when you think about it, what they're getting away, are they getting away with anything? It's more and more of this is going on. And you can't, even though the mainstream media is more intent on covering political arguments and dialogue than the actual news that is happening. Is it me, or is national mainstream media just there to yak at each other?
Oh, exactly. They always only present two sides. You ever notice that? They want a battle all the time. They want spectacle. They want somebody against somebody else, and this guy represents these people, and this lady represents those people, and they want them to hash it out on TV. And then they always cut in with commercials. Oh, we got to go to another commercial. When we come back, we'll do this. You know, they never finish the argument. It's disgusting. It is so it's so ridiculous.
They do finish some stuff. Are you guys familiar with Nancy Grace?
Yeah, I don't care for her that much.
No, nobody cares much.
She's on CNN. She's on Headline News or something.
You're right. yeah, even John is saying, you know, about the only thing that's going to fix things is a full-blown revolution. But there are ways to revolt and to create a revolution that doesn't have to be pitchforks and hammer handles, you know?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the...
Well, Occupy proved that.
Yeah, and it's the only way to get it done. I would remind everybody that tomorrow is the holiday for MLK.
Martin Luther King Jr. He preached nonviolence just like Gandhi did and many other people, and it worked for him. It worked for them.
And that's the way it can be done. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And I think
it takes a longer time, but in the end, it's a much saner and better way to go.
Well, and it's
Gwen. One thing I wanted to Thomas Jefferson, one of our founding fathers, was really of the mindset that we needed the periodic overthrow of the government, not necessarily a violent overthrow, but at least an overthrow of the government, just to purge it periodically. One of his famous quotes was, when injustice becomes law, resistance becomes our duty.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Very good point.
Absolutely. I would really ask you guys to take a listen to this. This is a snippet from, it's about 3.5 minutes from Bill Maher's Real Time on HBO. I don't watch him very often anymore because he pisses me off.
he does have his points from time to time.
Yes, he does. And I agree with him on a few things, but overall, I think he's just sort of an opportunist anymore for the camera. But hang on, take a listen to that. Now, the setup on this one is that the former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm faced off against the Republican strategist and wife of James Carville, who is, God, that guy just bugs me. But
both of
wife,
them do. Mary Madeline, yeah.
Madeline, yeah. On the impact and role and importance of women in politics. And I think that I'd really like to get you guys to comment after this. Just a second.
So there's something about Hillary that feels castrating, overbearing, and scary.
And this is why the Republican Party is shrinking, because they are anti-women. You've got 75%. We're just talking about the minimum wage. 75% of the people who are on minimum wage are women. If you had more women in Congress, the minimum wage would be raised from the federal government. 40% of households where there are children are headed by women. If you had more women in Congress, there would be affordable quality child care. If more women were in Congress, there wouldn't be a debate about whether your insurance company should cover contraception in the same way they cover Viagra. There needs to be more women, but why don't they run? They don't run because they don't want to put their foot into the piranic waters, which is Washington,
right.
D.C. And I just would want to say, I hope women run, because it's a form of service to your nation. It is a form of a way to bring balance. The only way you're going to get compromised in Congress, the only way you're going to see some sort of cooperation, is to have more women in the room and more women's voices represented.
You disagree? I've been in the room before you could even wear pants. Okay, in the Reagan administration,
you mean before a woman could wear,
pants in the White House. So I had one dress on the back of my door, and that I would bring in. No,
it has nothing to
do with our gender. It has to, and the template of male.
We should be there if they're going to legislate about us. We should be there.
I don't.
You don't.
Men have 92% of the leadership of the health issues to men.
You don't want to.
I don't want to aggregate the children's issues to men.
Why do you think that? The only women know how to fix this kind of stuff, and they don't. No, I'm just saying that 92%, for example, of the Republican leadership in the House are white males. That's what they know. That's what the perspective is. Don't you think it would be better for all
I think it would be better for all if there were fewer actions coming out of Washington and more action.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Wow.
There are only five women governors right now. Only five. We've gone backwards. When I was just elected, we had eight. There used to be 28% of the women in statewide elected offices were held by women. Of the statewide elected offices, 28% were held by women. Today, it's 23%. We have gone backwards.
If you're not a woman governor or you're a woman elected official, you can't have any impact. That's a male template.
No,
power and fame is a male template for
success.
I think I've had lots of impact. And
I'm sure you have.
And I've never wanted to run for office, ever. Not even close to office. They wanted James to run for office. If you weren't for office, you'd be running out of this house.
Don't you think so?
Like, why? There's lots of voices.
It would be a fairer country, though, if there were more people who looked like America representing America.
I was going to say, you might find me a bit biased, but you're talking to a man that has two daughters who who I am very, very proud of. And with women being 51% of the population, I think mm-hmm. the Congress and Senate, government in general, should reflect that.
I agree. I couldn't agree more.
They should also reflect Latinos and all people of color, and especially people from First Nations. There's not enough people who have been actually given the opportunity to reach out that way or even wanted to because of the treatment they've gotten, you know, on the reservations and throughout. I mean, there are just so many different. And what about the Muslims? We have a lot of American Muslims, and I'm saying Muslims because not all of them are. There's Orthodox Christian, but I'm talking about people from Middle Eastern countries who we've got second and third generation children here in this country now, and they're not represented in Congress or in even at the local levels either. Indian.
There's only one that I know of in the House, and he happens to represent my district. How do you like that? Keith Ellison is a Muslim, but he didn't grow up that way. He became Muslim as time went on. I think he was raised a Christian in one aspect or another, but he's a Muslim, and he's the only one I know of. I could be wrong, but I think he's the only one I know of in the House of Representatives right now.
Well, isn't it in Michigan somewhere there's a large Muslim population, and
yes.
got elected into Congress to represent that district.
Oh.
And you know, the big debate was how's he going to swear in, right? And basically, to make it palatable, got Thomas Jefferson's Koran that's in the Library of Congress, and that's what he swore in on. So it's like you can't be any more American than Thomas Jefferson. It was his personal Koran, and that's
very
what
true.
He swore in on. So I think there is another from a Michigan area there. And kudos to him.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
If we swore people in under the auspices of the Constitution instead of this "my God's better than your God" stuff, we might get someone.
Yeah, right.
So I do want to mention that John O'Brien has stated that in the chat here that the citizens of this country are being sold out by both political parties, and third-party
actions
now have to sue just to be on the ballot. They can't help but think that we are getting closer to violence being the only solution. Well, the thing is that it really is like I'm fully under the MLK banner on this. I'm for peacefully negotiating the new world, and I do think it's a possibility. It's about communication. You remember. It took so long for these civil rights actions to come about because it took so long for the communications to go around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, now we have the advantage of the internet and cell phones and everything else and all kinds of social media that we did not have in Martin Luther King Jr.'s day, and that should speed things up a bit. And it has in other parts of the globe especially. Look at how rapidly the revolution spread in Egypt, you know, and throughout Libya.
Yes.
Very good point.
And they've shut down all of these facilities. Egypt, you haven't got the right to communicate right now. In Egypt right now, people are being, you know, there's a lockdown on people because
it's bad. So did the French Revolution. I mean, that's where they invented the guillotine.
it's
just an overthrow and a revolution coming up from the proletariats doesn't mean that it's always going to turn out as well as it did in this country. But I guess aspect we were lucky. Also, personal shout out to John O'Brien. He's a good friend. I know him personally, and he's a very wise and intelligent young man. It's a pleasure that I can say hello to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and John is saying that MLK made great strides, but he personally doesn't think that MLK's dream has been fully realized. And I have to agree with him there because look around. I mean, shall I say Trayvon Martin? I mean, because because we have a black family in the White House right now does not make us equal opportunity country at all.
Not at all. It was a step in the right direction, but it didn't go far enough, like most of those steps, you know.
Yeah. It's going to take one, possibly two more generations for the total seamless assimilation of everybody, you know, treating everybody with respect. But again, there's still no guarantee of that because one of the few communist countries that I did go to when I was in the Navy was Yugoslavia. And I saw firsthand the tension between the Serbs and the Bosnians, which were, you know, basically from the old Ottoman Turks of the day. And, you know, they had been at each other's throats for hundreds and hundreds of years, almost a millennium.
Right. Well, and so, look at the various Palestinians and the Israelis, the Jewish community in the Middle East there. I mean, it's been going on for generations and generations and generations. And, you know, in America, we like quick solutions. We you know, everything's solved in a half-hour comedy TV program, but that's not real life. We've got to come up with a real aspect, which means that some struggles take forever. They take a very long time, and you just have to accept and push for more than you get each little increment, but you have to accept that a little tiny increment is better than none or better than going backwards. So you have to just keep chipping away at that block until it finally splits, it falls.
Well, Jack, let me add here, you know, and, you know, the Serbs and the Bosnians, blonde, you know, the Serbs are blonde hair, the Bosnians are dark-haired, Turks kind of thing, dark eyes and stuff. There is a physical difference, the same thing with the races in this country. There is a physical difference of darker skin and lighter skin in the Palestinians and the Arabs, the Palestinians and the Jews. If you do a DNA test, they're the same people.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that something?
Well,
and split apart way many years ago, and they've been fighting ever since.
Exactly.
Isn't it true that we're all the same DNA? We all got 12 strands with only two hooked up. I mean, that's basically who we are. But I got to tell you, there was a lovely piece on the on Facebook today, this morning, about I can't remember her name, but she was the lady who worked in the Polish ghettos during Nazi occupation, and she used to.
I know you're talking about, the name is escaping me.
Yeah, she smuggled children out in her toolbox, babies out in her toolbox, and she kept dogs that would bark so she could get children out. And she got over 2,500 Jewish children out of the Polish.
A real heroine.
Yeah, she was. And I said, you know, it's really lovely that, and she didn't get the Nobel, by the way, a warmonger did, the year up for it. She did a wonderful thing. Absolutely. She was a shining example to all of us on what we're capable of achieving and in small steps on our own, pushing forward as Jack likes to remind us to do.
Right.
And I responded to that post by saying, you know, I can't help but think of how many Palestinian families are aching to have their babies and their children free of Israeli oppression right now.
Exactly.
How the coin has turned so much, and how we have not learned. And I wonder if it were, you know, people like to use the famous fictional movie kind of scenario to say, well, if we all had to look up into the sky and see a threat to all of us from above, we would certainly pull together. But what if the threat is very real and staring us straight in the face, like a liquefied North Pole and the poisoned rivers and water tables across the land? The only trouble with this is that the people are not informed about the real devastation going on. I mean, this is our banner under which to unify a whole globe, is to heal.
Well, you know, along with, you made the point earlier about the great amounts of information that we have available to us now that we never had before. Along with that, the converse side of that, which is very real too, is that there's a tremendous amount of misinformation and disinformation that's being deliberately spread across all forms of media, including the internet, that people are trying to obfuscate what's going on, and it's a never-ending battle. You just have to fight lies with truth all the time whenever you can, and you got to overturn a lot of those lies, and unfortunately, it's part of human nature. The guy that's on top wants to stay there, or the guy that is striving to get up there is going to push everybody out of his way to try to get up there, or woman, or whoever it may be, whatever gender it may be. It's just, in a way, human nature. But, you know, there are certain aspects of human nature that can, on occasion, and must, overall, rise above that tendency to be so selfish and so self-centered and be more community-oriented and more fair and just in their approaches and in their outlooks and in their mindset. And when that is achieved, you're going to see great progress. Until you have that, you're going to have people fighting amongst each other, trying to get to the top of the anthill.
Well, Jack, you're describing the quintessential hero myth, you know, and it's the hero that makes the ultimate sacrifice of themselves that garners the attention of the whole world. You know, and
right.
And it's like, wow, that's a whole lot. But it seems to be the way it goes. Wayne, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was going to say, that's kind of like when what comes to my mind is those that, you know, embrace that wanted ignorance, those that want to be spoon-fed. And, you know, I like to bring up the fact of global warming. And because, you know, someone on Fox News says, you know, this is all bogus, there's no such thing, and they want to identify themselves as being a conservative, they just buy it wholeheartedly without... John Kennedy said, too often we enjoy the comforts of opinion without the discomfort of thought. They turn off their brain.
Good point.
I meet someone like that, they make that mention, my first question to them is, what is the carbon atom that we are referring to with the CO2 in the upper atmosphere? And I get this blank look or deer caught in the headlight look because I have taken them off script and they have no concept of even what my question was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
basically,
true.
Right, and that's where the base of the whole thing is it is organic carbon that is permeated and now at levels unforeseen ever in the Earth's history, that it is from the hydrocarbon fuels that have been burned, be it coal, mm-hmm. natural gas, gasoline, wood, whatever. We are now seeing those levels up in the upper atmosphere are far beyond. So the mm-hmm. Koch brothers funded their own research because they wanted somebody to come up and say that there is no global warming, it is not man-made. But unfortunately, after spending close to $300,000, their climatologist said, no, there is global warming, and because this atom is of a C14 configuration, it is man-made that's getting up there. Well, of course, they didn't announce that on Fox or anything, like, hey, we've been wrong.
Well, they try and squash it, or they try and distort it, or they try to ignore it. And they keep it from people's minds.
They just buried the findings.
Right.
And the Tea Party is still marching along like, you know, lemmings. And
it's all selfishly driven toward profit for them. That's the sad thing about it. They're not looking for the benefit of all the people economically or otherwise. They're just looking for their own private profit, and that's all they care about.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a bad, bad mindset to be in, but unfortunately, a lot of people are stuck there.
Yeah.
So that's our real battle. We have to overcome this nonsense that we are constantly just fed from all circles with. And we need to present the truth, as we always try to do, and we need to bat down these lies whenever they come our way.
Well, I, have, I have a question.
Programs and the internet blogs are the voice of what's out there saying, no, this is the truth.
Engage
in critical thinking and come, you know, and you'll see, you'll come to the same conclusion that where you have been presenting.
Exactly.
Wayne, John has a question that he's posing from the chat to you, and he wants to know if you think we Americans have industrialized ourselves to death.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Well, he wants to know, in your opinion, do you think we Americans have industrialized ourselves to death?
Well, it's, if you look at West Virginia and the coal industry, you'll see very much. Yes, we can go too far with it. We need to diversify more and look for safer forms of energy. And course from there. I mean, right now it's a necessary evil, we'll say, but we have to be cognizant of it and work towards other aspects. Be it wind, solar panels. I mean, space stations and remote areas have run on solar power for you know, criminy, the last 50 years.
Yeah, we need more forms of healthy, good energy. But, you know, it takes a certain amount of money and time and effort to develop these resources, and that's what a lot of people don't. They don't want to take the time or the energy or spend the money to do so. Well, they want to just keep things cruising as they are right now because they're benefiting from it. Well, I'm sorry. You know, by that token, we shouldn't have, we should still be in the horse and buggy days, and we've come a long way since then, and we need to go a lot further.
The company I'm working for, there's several engineers out in California that is working on a very large solar panel electric generation station.
Well, we wish them every success because that's sorely needed.
Yeah. We have what we need. We have what we need. We have the technology we need to create clean energy. And it's insane that we, and I did want to bring up two things before we end the show. We've got time here, but I wanted to talk about, there's a new group of people, and this was brought out in Al Jazeera this week, a group of, a fellow by the name of John Bertucci, who's carrying his Geiger counter wherever he goes in Northern California, has created a group of people who are on the West Coast who are dedicated to keeping a monitor on Fukushima Daiichi radiation.
Good.
He isn't a scientist. He's a filmmaker who's lived in Petaluma since the 50s, and he says he's learning about radiation monitoring because he's not seeing the United States government or local authorities doing enough to systematically monitor air, food, ocean waters for radiation levels after the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant disaster. And get this, it happened in 2011, and we're now in 2014. And there's been no response to how this country is being hit by the fallout by our government at all. And so this fellow, Mr. Bertucci, has created a group called, I believe they're called Fukushima Response. And there's also another place where you can get some really wonderful information that's duly diligent. And that's Ms. Milky the Clown on YouTube. She puts out the weekly news straight from the Japanese television networks. And then she does all of the coverage of what's going on organically on the ground by free energy and clean energy activists in Japan. That's interesting too. That stuff. I do not keep a weekly tab on it, frankly, because it scares me so much I get into fear and I don't want to live that way.
Right. Well, Glenn, let me interject here, too. A lot of people today do not realize, but the breeder reactor that enriched the uranium for the two atomic bombs that we dropped on Japan was up in Washington State. And it was in, of course, the early aspects of nuclear energy and the cutting edge of all this. They did not know, you know, what the health factors were and everything. So the radioactive gases, they just blew off into the atmosphere. And when it became known that everyone downwind from this site in Washington State was their thyroid, because that absorbs the radioactive iodine.
Right.
They were having thyroid problems, and everybody's on thyroid medicine. And if you could just see, you know, the if you looked at the medical charting of people that were coming up showing the thyroid problem, it would it had a central point where that reactor was, and it went like with the trade winds coming down from Alaska into the United States. And a lot of that. So even the radioactivity that this group may be recording could have been generated by our own country in the 40s.
Yeah, that's scary.
That could be a part of the whole thing going on here. They're called RadNet. The group that Mr. Bertucci and another fellow, and they're all over the country now. There's 34 different people who are taking it. And the this is they do monthly meetings, and they share the news about the Japanese government's activities at Fukushima. They send out the research reports from scientists that are making any available, and they're giving people ways and communities ways to monitor radiation levels for themselves. This is basically one of the things. In other words, the community is getting proactive. In spite of our government, the glaring light that should be presented on this, I think, is the fact that our government has not responded to an imminent threat, because I think it is. I think it musters that kind of a label. I mean, geez, you know, it's radiation. You can't see it. You can't smell it. But it's a signature in all of us now, and how much deeper it's getting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they've got their agency's air monitoring system, this RadNet. It consists of 132 stationary monitors spread throughout the U.S. Their monitoring stations continually read radiation levels, and a computer reviews the data and reports abnormal radiation readings to
and EPA. Spikes and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's very good.
To EPA laboratory staff. But, you know, EPA is a in the pocket of energy companies.
Oh, industry, you bet. Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was important to get that information out there. I think people should know that there's people in their communities that are taking action.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's very healthy and very needed. So let's continue to encourage that, because not for its own sake, but for the sake of a good end for everybody. That's what we want to have happen.
Well, the experts say that this RadNet is inadequate. It can't protect the public in a case of major nuclear disaster, but Jesus, nobody else is doing nothing. You know what I'm saying, guys?
Right. But it's a springboard to gain information and to act accordingly from. It's little bits of light that we don't have otherwise without them. So it's very valuable in that sense, no doubt about it.
Wayne, you're an engineer. Don't you think that the United States government, spearheaded by the EPA, should be having some sort of community involvement with what's, I mean, we're not getting told anything.
Well,
you know?
Very, very good point. Well, first off, we have to kind of go back and look at the previous years, and especially the previous W. Bush 8 years, where the Environmental Protection Agency was basically told, you know, we're in charge here. Don't bother enforcing anything. Don't look too hard for anything. Yeah, it's been brought to your attention. Well, let's just bury that and pretend that, you know, the ostrich head in the sand aspects. Plus, too, if you speak of the example that I gave there in Washington State and that breeder reactor and anything else that can come over from Japan, there's nothing we can do about it. So if people get worried, it's going to be the Chicken Little scenario, the sky is falling. And, they almost take the attitude, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We know it's there, but we don't want to get the general public population in such a frenzy because there's nothing we can do.
I hear
ignorance is bliss, I think, is what some scenario that could be applied here.
And the more ignorance they can have, the better, you know, they think. So it's too bad. But but we believe that knowledge is power and that knowledge is crucial to good positive action. And so we will continue to push for that knowledge, and we will resist any attempt for that to be limited to us. We want free access to the Internet. We want free net neutrality enacted. You know, we want people to always be able to find what they need to find without a bunch of crap being thrown at them.
Exactly. I was with we were kind of forced into friends of mine lived near a wood treatment plant. And the wood treatment plant was just burying, instead of disposing properly of their toxic waste, salt-treated lumber, that's all sodium arsenate, i.e. arsenic.
Ooh, yuck.
And,
yeah.
Creosoted. People think, tree sap. You know, hyped up tree sap. No, there's chemicals in there called pentachlorophenol that is a hexavalent. It's just one of the most toxic poisons there is. In salt treating.
Yeah, they're all deadly.
There's a hexavalent chromium, highly poisonous to any organic substance. That's why it keeps the wood from rotting. But anyway.
Gentlemen, we're at the end of the hour here.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. We'll keep it going.
Yes.
We'll keep it going next week for sure.
I want to thank you both for being here with me. I'm sorry to cut you short there, Wayne. We just ran out of time.
I know. There'll be another time, and we'll be able to pick it up. As long as we're getting
word out. Thank
you,
Gwen and Wayne. Thank both of you. And everybody keep pushing forward. We'll take it up again next week or some subsequent weeks.
Very good.
Wayne, will you please give people, let people know where they can find your blog and how to reach your stuff on the net?
Well, I shall. I will. So, as I told you before, I'm in the process of redeveloping a new one because I got a new computer and I can't get into my old one. So I'll revamp it and I'll pass that on in the future here.
Great.
Okay. And, folks, you can find Jack Jodell's blog at Saturday Afternoon Post. You just Google that and he comes right up. So
it's easy
to find. I want to remind everybody that we are sponsored by Roundtree7, that's the number 7.com, and invite you to go over and take a look at what everybody's posting over there. Some really good stories this week. And we got 1 minute left to say we're also sponsored by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Go check us out. Jack, thank you. Wayne, thank you.
Thank you, Gwen. Thank you, Wayne.
Gwen, thank you, too. It was a good program, and we did well.
Yes, very, very nice. And we'll keep pushing forward, and we'll look forward to speaking with a lot of you and hearing from you in the chat room and everything next weekend. next Sunday at the Sunday show. And so please tune in again. We welcome your comments.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
This has been the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. Thank you for listening. I'm Gwen Berry in South Florida, and I bid you a good week. Be safe out there, folks.